This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to iFanboy's Booksplode, Superman Birthright by Mark Waid and Lanil Francis Hugh. Hey everybody, you're listening to another edition of iFanboys Booksplode, the podcast where we talk about one book for a really long time. on this one, we're talking about Superman Birthright by Mark Waid and Lanil Francis Hugh. My name's Paul Montgomery. Joining me on this episode, Mr. Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Mike Romo.
Hey guys. I'm so glad we get to redo our Man of Steel podcast. This is really exciting. I know the fans want it. So.
Well, you bring up a good point. This is an origin story for Superman that it came out. It's been like 10 years. It came out in 2003 and 2004. And a lot of this is kind of a basis for Man of Steel, the movie that just came out. So there's a lot of different things you can find here. One of the prominent ones is, you know, the S stands for hope. Yeah. That's a Mark Waid idea, and as kind of outraged as Mark Waid was that he's, I think DC put up a list of like Superman books you should go out and read in advance of Man of Steel, and Birthright was not on that list, and so he's like, you don't include the book that it's based on. But he did say, you know, in some of his blog posts that he's actually kind of heartened that he'd left something to the Superman legacy
that will
continue on. So that's a big thing.
That would have been nice if they sort of included a list of books at the end of the movie for people to see, like show the covers of them and stuff like that. But I mean,
They did that for Green Lantern. That didn't.
Yeah, I remember that. Action. I don't know why they didn't do that this time.
I just want to drop the idea that it's possible. Almost likely that some Man of Steel discussion is going to bleed into this.
Okay.
It's just going to be hard not to talk about it. So this could be Man of Steel podcast part two eventually.
Yeah, and you can listen to the special edition podcast that you guys and Josh did on Man of Steel, and then I did a written review, and that's actually why I wasn't on the podcast, because I was writing that. So
You actually should read it because no one read it or talked about it.
That's right.
Very few comments.
There's just a little bit over 500. So, yeah, you can wade right in there. So Birthright. Is this your Superman origin story?
No.
Is this anyone's Superman origin story?
Well, it's funny because I was thinking about it. When this came out originally, I wasn't a big fan of it.
I didn't even know what happened.
Which is funny because I went back in the archive and looked, and I did make one of these issues the pick of the week.
You did?
Number 8, the Lex Luthor spotlight issue, where we learn his you know, history of Smallville and all that stuff.
Okay, that's a really good section.
That was a pick of the week that I made. But I didn't, on the whole, like this because, for me, Superman's origin begins and ends with Byrne's Man of Steel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say this isn't good, and I really did enjoy this on second read much more than I did originally. We could talk about it in a second. But
offhand, do you know when Man of Steel came out?
Yes, 87.
Okay.
You know, this it's just, you know, everyone has their own continuity, and for me the origin I like the best, and the one I think of when I think of Superman's origin is Man of Steel. That's, to me, the most Christopher Reeve feeling story.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's elements of it I really do like a lot.
Even compared to Superman's Secret Origin, which he looks like Christopher Reeve.
Yeah,
Jeff Johns and Gary Frank one that came out.
Yeah, even then, I think the tone is more in line with those movies.
It's funny. I don't ever think of a single story as defining the origin story. I think I like seeing the same song played in different keys,
sure,
and
sure,
different styles. Yeah. If this was interesting, I had been moving to LA, I guess, when this had happened, so I totally missed this book, and it was really interesting to reread this with, you know, being 10 years later, going, oh, that's kind of, you can see kind of the seeds that it planted, and you could also see when it felt kind of dated a little bit, some of the notions. And then you realize, again, like we talked about Man of Steel, just how really compelling Smallville is really turning out to be in terms of the Superman mythos. There's a little bit, I felt I was remembering Smallville more and more while I was reading this.
The
TV show.
Okay.
Just sort of the tenor of the relationship between the parents and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think what has happened for me in the more modern Superman retellings, I've liked it when authors have really explored the relationship between Kal-El and Clark and Martha.
Yeah.
And really having more scenes like that, and having them be having more of a partnership, and the mom being sort of, look, we're always going to love you, but you got to do what you got to do, and we're going to support you no matter what. And like, it was cool to see that sort of underscored in this book again. And I just hadn't realized how long Lennell has been doing art. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting to see an example of his, I guess, what would be pretty damn early.
Yeah, it's very raw, and I think that's one of the reasons why. I was gonna say as a kid, but I was 20, 25 or so when this came out.
Yeah, that's the new kid, Connor.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't a kid. I mean, I was 18 when this came out.
Now that I'm in my 30s, being in your 20s is considered to be a kid. I think one of the reasons why I didn't like it originally was the art. You know, I appreciate it more now, but I also see where it's really rough in parts where you is still sort of figuring out his style.
Lots of sharp edges. And you kind of don't think of sharp edges when you think of Superman, you know?
Like, right.
Yeah, he seemed very blocky at times, and that was interesting to me.
It's also a very, very sort of ballsy format in that, you know, we start off with Clark, you know, as a young man. The format of Man of Steel fits this in that we see the origin, and then it jumps to him as a sort of young adult. We skip the whole childhood bit.
He's 25. When we
and so we see him sort of running around the globe as a freelance reporter, and we spend a lot of time with him in Africa, like basically the whole first two issues.
Yeah, he's in the Sudan, but he said he's filed articles in every continent.
But it's very ballsy to have the first two issues of this Superman New Origin story be about 25-year-old Clark Kent reporting on stories in the Sudan.
And that must have really blown people away when they're expecting the whole high school awkwardness thing. And I remember talking to my friend Jonathan about Man of Steel, and I guess it is going to weave its way throughout that movie, but how he was really relieved that he didn't have to live through all that. He kind of got that. So I really applauded it. Here's what seems to happen. When writers need to show Superman's weakness, they just show it that it's, he can't be in two places at one time.
Right.
And it's something that, okay, I get it. Maybe it's because I just saw the movie and this Christopher Reeve movie was in my head. But when I came to it, I'm like, okay, this again. But I mean, it's not a fair criticism. But it was interesting to see that seems to be something that writers need to come back to.
But that's almost the essential tragedy of Superman, isn't it? That he can't save everyone.
Right.
And right.
That's how
and
you
he has
really,
to choose.
That's how you
choose.
Really show it. Who does he decide to save is part of the problem. And that's part of the problem I had in Man of Steel. Oh, God, we're going to get into that.
No.
Is that he never chose anything in Man of Steel. It was just fight Zod, not to try to save anybody, but we'll get into that. We will. We won't. We will.
No, you know, if you're going to get into it, I mean, this answers a lot of those questions where, you know, Superman is concerned about collateral damage and protecting people. And you see it right in the, you know, in Sudan and some of the attacks, he actually does, you know, heat vision, you know, field surgery, but then he also has to run. And that's the thing you're talking about where he has to be in two places at once and he really can't. And there's a couple instances of that.
What a lot of this is, so Man of Steel comes out after Crisis and it's sort of redefining the modern Superman by tossing out most of the Silver Age conceits of Superman, and a lot of this is bringing those back. And so really I think what you how your opinion is of this book and the origin depends on how much you want those elements to return. So basically Man of Steel threw out the idea of a young Superman and threw out the idea of Lex Luthor living in Smallville with Clark, which is a Silver Age idea. And this book brings it. Doesn't bring back Superboy.
Well, you know, it's not like, you know, lion heads and horses and things like that.
The idea of Clark and Lex living together was something that was in the Silver Age.
I never knew that.
And, you know, Superman causing his hair to fall out in an accident was in the Silver Age in Lex's lab. And so they wiped that out in Man of Steel. And then Mark Waid brought this all back. So it really is you know, there's sort of, you know, Mark Waid loves the Silver Age and it's not a knock on him. That's just, he loves it. So he brought all those elements back that people who, like me, who likes Man of Steel, you know, when I was younger, wasn't so happy with.
Well, there's a lot of very modern ideas too. I mean, there's the whole thing where Superman, and I think this is a Waid thing, where Superman sees like a color aura around all life forms, and that's why he's a vegetarian. He doesn't want to. He sees the color sucked out of, you know, animals that have been rendered into food. And
that's just lame. It's like, come on. It's like midichlorians or something. I mean,
it's not that bad.
So do larger people have a brighter aura because they've eaten more? I mean, I kind of just like rolled my eyes a little bit on that one. I mean, let's have some limitations on his power. I didn't really catch it. I actually didn't even notice the whole bit.
And that was something else that burned deep. You know, greatly depowered Superman, whereas here to sort of bring back the idea of he can do lots of crazy things.
What do you guys think? I found I'm sort of paging through it as we discuss it, and one of the characterizations that really kind of puzzled me a little bit in terms of consistency was Jonathan Kent's character. Like, I couldn't figure out what his angle was. Like, I thought at first when I was reading it, he was going to be more irascible and less accepting of Clark, especially because he gets all frustrated that he didn't help with the tractor, and then he starts beating on the spaceship. But then later he's arm in arm with Clark, sort of trying to figure out the mystery behind Lex. And it just seemed really wonky. Of all the characters in the book, that he seemed the most, I just couldn't figure out where he was.
Just inconsistent. I think there's two things. I think part of the later depictions of Jonathan is all like there's a panel where he's like smiling and, you know, like and hugging Clark later on, and I think that's Lanil Yu maybe not getting that scene exactly right. It felt a little bit off tonally. Before that, when he's acting out and you know, trying to pound the space capsule into submission and ends up destroying the barn, I think that's basically him scared. He loves his son. And I think he knows that he's destined for big things. Maybe not even to the extent of Jonathan Kent in the Man of Steel movie. He knows that it's going to be out of his hands at some point. And I think he's just scared having to confront that. He just got his son back after him being away for like 7 years, as he left at 18 right after he graduated high school and then traveled the globe. And he wanted a little bit more. I think he wanted a little bit more time with him. And now Clark is really excited about going out into the world, stepping out and becoming this superhero, which they don't even have in this world. You know, like he's going out to do this thing, and he's going to be putting himself in dangerous situations. And I think that's Jonathan maybe not acting like himself. I think he's just scared and acting out on that. And then as the story progresses, we get to see that he's a little bit reluctant, he's a little bit cautious, but he understands and is proud of what Clark is doing. but this, I think the situation in this book, and it goes even into the prologue in Krypton, this is a book about really strong moms.
Yeah.
Jor-El was scared too. He didn't know if his son was going to make it out of this okay. And he didn't know if he was just sending him to his doom. And Lara was the one who convinced him, you know, I hate this, but we got to do it. If he stays here, it's certain that he's dead. But if we send him out there, there's hope. And the same thing with Martha Kent. She's really strong, and I think that's where this Superman gets a lot of his courage.
I like Martha a lot in this.
Yeah, she's and how she helps. I love the idea that he really steps into Clark as a character before he heads off to Metropolis, and how she can be really frank with, like, never wear a tight shirt. You know, just like the way she treats him. It was really, I really thought it was really tender, yet she was acknowledging that he was now a grown-up. And that must be such an interesting time for a parent where they really had to go, he was 18 the last time I saw him, and now I really have to treat him like a grown-up, but I can still be helpful. And I have to acknowledge that he's good-looking, even though he doesn't know it, and I have to help him be schlubby. And I thought that was really kind of cool that you get sort of an insight into the struggle that Clark has to try to be Clark. And I don't think I've seen that sort of process and trying to figure out just the different levels of nervousness. I've never seen that process sort of explained before, at least in this detail. Again, I still remember the quietly sort of the most fondly in terms of full transformation. But I thought this was I was surprised at how compelling this was. And I liked how they discovered the whole glasses thing. That was cool.
One of the things that the movie really neglected was the idea that he's a different person and different personas, because he really was never in the movie any different from Clark Kent to Superman. But there's a tendency to over-explain things, but I thought this explained the right things. You know, you're never going to fully explain how a guy puts on glasses and is not recognized. That's just something you go with Superman. But you can explain other things around him. Christopher Reeve did the voice, and he did the hunching.
Yeah.
And here we sort of get more into it. I love the book, the fact that he had an acting book and that he went through the whole process of figuring out how to be different, which was good.
And before we move on from the Kents, I think I just love the fascination with UFOs and how she's got, you know, kind of like she's got the computer all set up, and she probably learned how to do all that stuff so she can learn more about her son and where he comes from. And it started maybe as a curiosity, and maybe I can figure out where he's from. And then it just became like this hobby, you know. Jonathan calls it her hobby room, and I love that. And that's, she's also able to keep in touch with him because she's so tech savvy, and they have like this encrypted thing where they talk to each other. And that's sort of a great through line for the book, that when he moves to Metropolis, he's able to keep in touch. And I think that's a really important part of Clark's humanity, that he stay in touch with his family. And
and also that he always does kind of need help from his mom.
Yeah.
And as an adult, you find yourself turning to your parents and your mom in particular in different ways that are surprising. I do like the introductory of the Daily Planet being this busy, crazy place. I always loved sort of the origin of like his first couple of days there.
Yeah.
And I was very curious to see how he would handle, those three characters, Perry, Jim/Jim and Lois.
I love that Jimmy was Jimmy to everybody but Clark. I love that bit.
Even to Superman, it's Jimmy.
Yeah.
But with Clark, it's Jim. And Jimmy really clings on to that.
No, I think for me, the story really picks up when it gets to Metropolis. I did really enjoy everything else before that. But, you know, I think these are great depictions of the classic relationships. I love Lex Luthor.
This is a great depiction. It's a great depiction of Lex, and it feels really personal. And I can see why you chose that one issue as a pick of the week, where we get to go back and see Lex in Smallville, and he's just as much, or maybe more, of an alien than Clark is.
Oh, totally more. He doesn't understand how to deal with people.
That's my favorite part of the book. I think
he can't deal with people. He doesn't know human interaction baffles him. When dealing with anybody not as smart as him, which means no one, he can't handle. And I love the scene where Clark brings Lex back home, and Jonathan's working on the milking machine, which is broken, and Lex, you know, works on it, makes it more efficient, but at the same time doesn't understand how it has to work, and so, you know, starts hurting the cows, and yeah. It's sort of a disaster. Sort of a great encapsulation of he understands the machines, he can make them better, but he doesn't understand how the machines have to work.
He has a terrible bedside manner. It's like he's like the most brilliant, you know, surgeon, but he can't, you know, make people feel better. You know, he can fix them, but he can't put them at ease when he's talking to them. So that kind of thing.
It was reminding me a little bit of the current Sherlock, Cumberbatch's sort of interpretation of that sort of cold, probably autistic, or at least a lot of Asperger's syndrome, especially obviously during the clearest example of being the deduction part in the classroom.
Yeah.
But you can see why they became friends, and it was, I love that part where he shows him his invention and it works, but he goes into that white rage where he's so vulnerable because he thought it didn't work, but of course it did. it's an interesting way to humanize Lex in a different way. And I love the fact that Clark is the only one that can really call him on it. Take, for example, the football game where he's like, dude, you got it. Please, just never again, mm-hmm. you know? And it's interesting that Lex is able to listen to him. I didn't quite buy, and I'm curious what you guys thought, that he didn't remember Clark. I don't see how that's possible.
Yeah, that's the only. I mean, I think the idea is that he's so enraged by what happened in Smallville, he sort of buried it in his subconscious. But that's probably the biggest stretch of the story, more so than no one recognizes Clark with glasses.
I took that more as like just he's willing himself not to remember Smallville, and right. I think that's part of it. And it's one of those things where it's a trope sometimes where you have this trauma and then you recreate, you know, a memory just as a way to cope. And he's been lying to himself for so long that it's become the truth.
So I think that's asking a lot of the reader, though, especially given the proximity of the scenes just in the book, the way it's constructed. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, wait a second. If he had all of these profound moments, indeed, the moments when he failed early on, which probably drove him to where he was going to be. And also, by the way, Clark is right there before he has that massive explosion and his father's died and he gets, you know, has no more hair and it's burned badly. I didn't buy it. And it really frustrated me. I thought it would come back at some point. I thought even that he might have known that he was... The fact I just didn't. I mean, I get it that he can't know, but in part of me was like, "Wow, maybe Wade will say, yeah, I know that Clark Kent is Superman, and then I'm just gonna pretend and then reveal it later on." Just because if he's so smart, if he's so intelligent, and mm-hmm. lived through all of this with Krypton and seeing Clark, I mean, he's not an idiot, and then the light would have dinged. Oh, my invention did work. You know what I mean?
Right.
So no. Maybe I was being too detailed.
No, I think
it frustrated me.
I think you're right. That's, you know, it's I think it's a byproduct of some of the rest of the book being so thoughtful about the way, you know, his powers work or the way the story is revealed. That, you know, this is one case in the story where he's trying to service this long-standing tradition that people don't know that Clark Kent is Superman.
I liked the way that Byrne handled it. It was not in Man of Steel, but it was in the following series, right, that Lex, you know, didn't know Clark growing up in that version, and so he met Clark and Superman at the same time, and he built a machine that figured it out, like it printed out on the screen Clark Kent and Superman, but
from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Basically, the idea to Lex that someone like Clark could be Superman was so absurd to him that he decided that the machine must be broken and or not work properly. But it was just that the idea of this
mild-mannered
reporter being so. But it's like what Mike said. He would have started putting two pieces together that he had an extraterrestrial machine, you know, detecting machine that went off when Clark was around, that he should, and it would have all sort of fallen into place. And I don't know that necessarily you could tell a story where Lex knows who Clark is. I mean, you could.
Absolutely.
I think you could. I think it would be an interesting choice to do so. But that was, to me, the only thing that really didn't work in the story was the idea that Lex just sort of went, nah, I'm going to forget everything that happened in Smallville. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand why, but it didn't necessarily work for me.
Totally. I think the book goes into sort of, the series goes into a sort of a lull after that Lex storyline. I mean, you could kind of see it coming a mile away with the fleet and the alien and like, and then the holographic warriors or whatever. Like it started going from something that seemed really unique and special to something that was a little bit more like ordinary and I've been here before and kind of like, oh, this is now where the summer blockbuster part of the story,
yeah, it's,
I guess,
you know, Superman and Kryptonite and the whole thing of that we've seen not just with Superman but with, you know, Spider-Man and a bunch of other characters where
yes,
do we trust this, you know, this character, this person who's an alien from another world and that kind of thing. And then of course you have the, you know, the moment where they pick up the discarded Superman shield fabric from his costume and use it as kind of a banner, and now the people are fighting for Superman because they believe in him now. And
he really did a good job of stitching that back together with his heat vision.
Very good. Really,
it wasn't
precise.
Even like crooked at all.
No, really good.
So the main thrust is once he's moved to Metropolis and he comes up against Lex Luthor, Lex discovers Krypton through the dying, you know, light and information travels, you know, at light speed to Earth, so right. We're seeing the stars. They're already dead. So he sees the information from Krypton rise at Earth. He gets it all.
Yeah, he's seen all throughout Krypton's history. He's, you know, and able to base the designs of his fake weapons and maybe real weapons.
So he sees Superman's crest on Krypton. He decides he's going to fake an invasion and pretend that Superman is the lead scout for this invasion to turn everyone against him, which works.
I thought it was a great idea.
Works temporarily.
And the really interesting part of that is, you know, in all the different Superman origin stories, you know, including this new movie, Clark finds out about his heritage in vastly different ways.
Yes.
You know, and like in the Smallville TV show, it's all through the series in dribs and drabs. He finds out more and more as it goes along. And you know, he gets his costume that way. In other versions, you know, Ma Kent takes his baby blanket from the rocket and, you know, makes a costume out of that. That's in various incarnations. Here, Superman learns his real name and where he's from. From Lex Luthor, which is a really interesting idea.
And very elegant, like really great.
Oh, that was a great scene,
That's a really great scene. And it's oddly one of the few acts of kindness so that you can imagine Lex having done by accident, you know? And there was a lot of, you know, it was interesting to see these moments of realization. I thought Lennell was figuring out emotionality while he was drawing this. But there were some moments that I thought he did pretty well trying to, when he was realizing all that kind of stuff. I did want to see what you guys thought, and we'll get back to that. But about Clark's characterization and how it was being handled, I didn't really understand why everybody was ostracizing him. And your parallels to Spider-Man and Peter Parker were right on target. It was just like a Spider-Man story.
You mean
like,
towards the ends?
Well, his staff members bail on him when they're out drinking. They make fun of him. I think it's the idea that he's the country bumpkin.
And yeah,
but he's acting that way. He's bringing it upon himself. He wants to disappear. That's the whole thing.
Well, he's acting that way,
mom.
But he's also bummed about it. He's not happy that they bail on him at the bar and go to a different bar.
I guess I just didn't see what they were complaining about. I just had to infer it. Oh, like why won't he just open up and hang out a bit? But
it's because you're a nice guy, Mike. You would bring him to the bar with you.
I would totally do that.
But
I never saw
him.
Like
jerky city reporters who think he's a bumpkin and don't want to hang out with him because he's a drip, you know. And so they.
It was almost like, since we weren't going to do the high school scenes, we're going to inject them into the.
I can see that.
So, but I guess just because I was siding with Clark on it, I just felt like it was a little early on in his career for him.
You feel yourself in Clark.
I do see a lot of myself, mostly the glasses.
He's like, you know, he's like the kid in the after school special who learns martial arts and he's, you know, he knows karate and like the guys keep picking on him and he knows I can't unleash this on them because I'm super strong and I've got the moves, but that doesn't mean that he's got to feel good about it. Like he can still be down about that and that the fact that he has to keep everything kind of bottled up. But then, you know, the important thing is that, you know, Lois gets him and Lois sticks up for him when she doesn't so much do that for anyone else.
I really wanted more scenes between those two. You make a great point. And like the fact that she does get him, but in relatively short amount of time, I would have liked a couple of more pages of them. I think one of a really great part of the 78 movie is the balcony scene. And I do realize that they end up flying and she starts singing that song. But, right. But like, I love watching writers do that first story about Superman, you know, like, yeah. Okay, I've got a few questions. Okay, I'll answer a few of them. And I would have liked to have seen that just because Wade was taking on so many other interesting tenets of the story. The faster than the speeding bullet, I thought was actually kind of cute, though dangerous. But like, but I would have liked to seen her sort of react a bit more. I feel like she sort of buys into the concept of Superman rather quickly. And I do realize that when we meet her, she is sort of doing research on some sort of strange person that's being able to do stuff. It's kind of like Man of Steel again.
A man but in khakis. I would've... That's all we know. He's right.
Guy in khakis.
He's really strong. There's not a lot of Lois in this book.
Which is weird because there's so much Martha.
She has a lot of... she has a lot of impact in the scenes that she's in, but she's not... It's, I think, compared to other Superman origin stories, there is much less of her on screen.
I wonder if it's a tougher nut to crack than we think, the Lois Superman Clark relationship, because if you think back to the Bruce Timm cartoon, had almost nothing with the two of them. I mean, she was a major character, but they didn't even deal with the relationship. There was no romance in that series. I just wonder, because this is around the same time, this is a few years after, but it's still sort of the same era, in that, you know, they didn't even deal with the love triangle in the cartoon ever. And I wonder what it is about that makes it difficult.
Maybe this isn't, you know, it's not right after, but it's closer to you know, Lois and Clark, know, that TV show, and it being just in your face.
No, that was way before the cartoon.
Yeah, that was the 90s?
Yeah, that was when I was
I know it's in the 90s. I just mean, like, Wade doing a new origin story. We've seen a lot of the Lois stuff. Maybe I want to focus on some of the other things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was just his intention, was just, I'll, you know, get Lois right whenever she's, you know, in panel. But I'm more interested right now in Lex and Clark as a character, because we start out, he's in the Sudan and it's just Clark on his own. And it's not no Pete, no Lana until later. No,
Lana's kind of a tart. In this,
I didn't even notice her. She's
the cheerleader who tells the quarterback she's going to take care of it when they get home because he's stressed out.
Yeah. It's a little Varsity Blues.
I found myself really wishing that they had just straight adapted this book for the movie.
I felt that too. I was like, this is really.
You could totally cut out the extreme. You can cut out the. You know, as great as it is, you can cut the Africa stuff out. You can cut a lot of the, you know, Lex at home stuff.
I like the Africa stuff. I would keep.
I know, but I'm saying for a movie, you can cut out that stuff and just go straight to, you know, basically what I'm saying is the point he gets to Metropolis on would have been a great film. You can have Lex. He's not necessarily he's the primary villain in the background, but you still have Zod. You still have a Kryptonian invasion and fight and all that stuff, and you would have had a really satisfying story.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
That's a mess that they put.
There's a lot of stories I would rather have than the story that we got.
Well, I guess this sort of leads up to what I felt like. I was enjoying the book, but I wasn't like thrilled by the book. But really, the ending moment, like I was reading this while I was at work, but we were on break, and I was at the pool in Vegas, and I was finishing it up. And the moment where he is able to send that message to his parents before Krypton blows up. I was completely blown away by that moment. I was shocked and stunned, and like I was like verklempt, to say the least. I had to put on sunglasses, let people see my eyes get moist. But like I almost felt like that was the note that this entire story was going to be built around, and then it sort of spilled out from there. Because that for me was a profoundly touching. A concept, and it was interesting to see an echo of that more recently when they did that backup story when the folks at NASA are able to aim all the satellites and see Krypton's last moments. It was sort of the same kind of thing, but to be able for him to actually have communicated with his parents and say that he's okay, that would be that really, really what made an impact on me.
It's like,
and I would think that it would set a stage for Superman that was so much going to be so much more grounded and so much feeling like that part of himself was fulfilled. I thought it was amazing. Really,
much less
really
lost, much less sad.
Yeah.
About, I mean,
yeah.
You know, you're still sad that your family and your people are dead, but he was able to at least say, "I made it." You know,
they were able to die.
Right. It's just right because it's just for them. Like he doesn't really get, you know, to talk to them. He doesn't get to, you know, hug them or anything like that. Yeah. You know, in the Man of Steel movie, like he gets to walk around a ship with Jor-El, which I almost think is like it's too much. Like there should be a gulf between them, but that moment that he's able to, you know, send his parents off with a note of hope, not a note of uncertainty. You know, yeah, they know
a
that
note
he
of,
made it.
A finality, a note of confirmation.
Right.
That it worked is I thought it was amazing.
Pitch perfect note. And up until then, I wasn't sure how I felt about about Lex's device that he created where he can see into, you know, this other place. I was like, that's a little bit like broad of an idea. And I don't quite understand. Like, even I know he's, you know, a gifted kid, but like to come up with something like that. Even though, like, this is later on, like he's worked on it for the past 7 years, it's a little out there in terms of.
Well, in terms of science, it's not that far off of what they think they can do eventually. In terms of, you know, grabbing signals from space and, you know, eventually.
It's the two way thing that is less easy to believe,
right?
The transmission part.
That it totally sold me on it is that that's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, here's my ignorance. Did this characterization of Superman, did it go further, or was this just sort of a 12-issue maxi series and that was it?
Well, this was the modern day origin. You know, they used this as until for however long, but you know, Wade didn't write the books.
They used it until Secret Origin, right?
Yeah, basically. But, you know, Wade didn't take over Action Comics and continue the story, you know. Like
right.
The benefit of Byrne's Man of Steel is that he did continue the story. He didn't write the next 2 years of Superman. So he was able to build on what he did, and it really did feel like a origin. Whereas this didn't feel – and I don't really remember much of that from that era because it really wasn't that memorable in terms of Superman.
Yeah, I literally can't remember. I just don't know.
But I think the main takeaway from this is that I think Wade has got a great handle on the character. I mean, his Superman is great. It's not, he's not a boring Boy Scout, and he's also not, you know, what we saw in the movie. He's Superman. He's still inspiring, but he's also able to, you know, he doesn't flash moments of anger so much. Well, a little bit, but he's a
That's
human.
The way you draws him, sort of. Yeah. The moment where he sees the, you know, the S-Shield burned into, you know, into the ruins of the city. He puts on the heat vision eyes. And he gets a little scary. And he's hell no, and just goes back. And that was sort of a, you know, up until then, it was a moment of defeat. He was sort of, you know, off licking his wounds. I think he was going to go home, and to get away from the Krypton or the Kryptonite radiation. And then he sees that S-Shield, and he's like, no, I can't let you do that to, you know, with my symbol, and then to do that to these innocent people. I got to fight. So he goes back. And so, it's a moment of determination. It's a little bit, it's the Jim Lee thing where he gets really scary looking with the heat vision eyes. And so maybe a little bit too far.
But I think that's kind of the point though, isn't it? I mean, it's pissed off. Heat vision Superman would be terrifying if he's flying at.
Yeah, it's a glimpse into the nightmare of what would happen if Superman went off the deep end. It would have been really interesting to see.
But he never crosses the line.
He doesn't.
No.
He gets mad, justifiably so, but he never crosses that line, which I wish Wade had taken over the books and kept writing the story. I mean, as much as I didn't love it at the time, and then I did quite enjoy it this time, I wish he had taken this and run with it as the sort of the world.
Mm-hmm. I was really interested to see him having a fist fight with Lex toward the end, like him having to pull his punches. It was interesting because he doesn't really fight people that much. Everybody else is in power suits and all that kind of thing. And there's some in the back, the version I have, there's a lot of exposition sort of analysis and explanation about the different characters and in the back of the book and how he always has to, as Clark, he can't be too good at anything and he has to really watch himself physically. He can't play pickup basketball and all that kind of stuff. And it was interesting that they had spent so much time focusing on that, like with this very intense fight where he literally could have punched Lex's head off. I thought it was weird that he would be, it was almost like classic Superman where he was just in fisticuffs all the time. It was, I remember going, huh, you think he would only have to hit him once. You know what I mean? Like there was no exploration of that. So
was he weakened by kryptonite at that point? I'm looking back.
I don't know. I'm looking, yeah, I don't, it just seemed odd to me that he would, because there were several punches that he did.
Yeah, he hits him a couple of times.
But it was interesting. You don't even get a sense. I don't imagine Lex being that strong.
Well, is Lex like is he like irradiated by kryptonite at this point? Because he's like he's got this green aura and he's been like
maybe that's what
his eyes are green and his green green
color. Maybe that's what it was.
He's just weakened.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
And now the question, I think that's something that they don't explore, but and it's more, you know, implied, is Lex irradiated by kryptonite from the explosion all those years ago, or is it just the, or is it maybe a combination where he's using that device and is in contact with?
I think it's a device.
I think it's got to be the device. I think.
Is there, I mean, there's merit to the idea that Lex would be, you know, and haven't they talked about Lex being like doesn't he get cancer from kryptonite in some sense?
Well, that was the original in this story. Kryptonite is completely harmless to humans. There's no radiation poisoning possible, at least according to this.
But what if in, you know, in that big explosion, he's like infused with, you know, kryptonite, which is sort of a Smallville thing too, so that when you know, that would be kind of a neat idea, that even though he's still human and it doesn't augment his powers or anything, like he doesn't have special abilities.
Just keep Superman from hurting him.
That Clark, yeah, would be at least a little bit weakened. So
in the old story, it was like any other radiation, and Lex had a kryptonite pinky ring he kept on all the time.
Right.
You know, and so then eventually that gave him radiation poisoning and he had to lose the hand and it eventually killed him. And so, I mean, that was sort of the irony of it back then, was that, you know, his attempts to defeat Superman ended up killing him. And then, of course, he was put in a clone body, much younger, with fantastic hair and a beard. But that's a whole other story. But although if you were a super rich bald guy, you'd probably put yourself in a clone body with awesome hair, too. But
I don't know if I go red hair. But
You know what struck me here is that I usually am pretty good when I read a trade of being able to see the different, when it breaks from issue to issue. And it really struck me that I there were many times I didn't know when one issue ended and the other began. It was very much written as a continuous narrative.
Yeah.
There were no review points. And I imagine this must have been kind of frustrating to read as single issues because it was just so straight ahead, just from a structural point of view. I thought that was kind of interesting, cause especially since we're talking 10 years ago.
It's a fun read. I read these initially, got them all on Comixology. And you know, I flew through them. You know, really, yeah. It's a story that moves. You know, and which is a compliment. It's a good, fast paced story that doesn't doesn't linger too long on anything, because there's a lot to do in 12 issues.
But it's so rich in character, though. I mean, you don't think of that. You know, when someone says it's a really breezy, you know, fast read, you think that comes at the cost of characterization, and that's very much not the case here. This a great character book.
Wade's an old school guy who excels at telling fast paced action stories while never neglecting the characters. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at his work now with Daredevil and Hulk, and it's the same thing.
Yeah,
I also think he does a really great job of leaving you wanting more. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, by the time that the book was over, like I felt like, okay, now I'm ready to keep going with these cats and see the relationships sort of keep going and see Jimmy more often, see Lois more often. So it actually left me kind of sad.
Yeah,
that's
the origin story you should do, right? You should want to spend more time in that world and not be all angry about it.
Yeah. What do you mean angry?
I don't know. I really did find myself. I don't think I've read this since it originally came out.
So, I had never read it before, so it was really interesting to see it, a different take on it.
And like you said a while ago, I do like different variations on a theme. It's almost like I really like covers of songs. I really like, you know, artists who paint the same painting over and over again. And I do like to see origin stories over and over again, because it's always interesting to see different takes on sort of classic themes. And I could read Superman origin stories once a year as long as they were well told well.
Yeah, there's, you know, there's people always complain, oh no, a new Superman origin story. I'm always excited about it. I mean, I'd also love to see more great continuing adventures of Superman that aren't just like Justice League stories where he's one of the characters. And those things do exist. But I can never get tired of seeing this origin story because it's so iconic and it's so personal that it really is a good analogy that it's like covering a song. And mm-hmm. you get to just see different notes of, you know, from different people's backgrounds and what things they find the most important, or just slight little twists and variations. Speaking of which,
they went, it's in the back matter, they went to some degree of explanation about the Superman uniform, the costume, mm-hmm. and how like special and unique it was. And I was like, I don't know what they're talking about. What was the costume like before this book came out? Because this seemed like very much by the numbers, maybe the cape was a little bit different.
Were they talking about it just in general? Because it's just a classic costume.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why I asked, because it just seemed a very classic costume to me. But they went, oh no, this is very different take on the costume.
I'm trying to think what came before this, like directly before it.
Yeah. I mean, he went to some, they do some explanation, which I thought was kind of interesting. The best way, it's so bright and so colorful as to say, look, I'm not a threat. You can see me coming a mile away. I'm not a mystery. I'm an emblem. I'm enigmatic. I'm something to look forward to, instead of being dark and brooding like Batman, for example. You can't sneak around in this costume. So maybe I thought, oh, okay, so maybe the costumes were more muted beforehand. But for me, this was exactly the 1978 costume.
The shield has changed size over the, I mean, it's changed form over the years, but the shield is particularly big here.
Yeah,
I mean, that's probably the biggest I would notice.
Yeah.
Very prominent trapezius muscles. Sort of an open collar. That's kind of interesting, the posture for Clark Kent is different than it is for Superman, and that's a story thing. But also I feel like the character's bigger when he's Superman. Like mm-hmm. he seems a little bit not skinny, but like he seems a little bit more, I don't know, like he seems bulkier as Superman, even within the same, you know, time.
So. Well, that was one of the things that Martha was trying to explain to him in the beginning, was he had to wear a lot of big baggy clothes. Was, you know, in the real world, they did that for Batman Begins, but to make Christian Bale look younger, they put him in giant clothes, so that when he in the flashback scene, so that he looked really skinny. Then in the tight clothes as an adult, you can see how he's bigger. But I just think this is a great origin story that you can hand to anybody, especially. You know, you can hand it to anybody who loved the movie, because there's enough of the movie in here. You know, there's a lot of the Krypton stuff. Those flying dragon things that are in here too.
I forgot those were in there. Yeah.
This is a great book to hand to somebody and say, if you like the movie, read this. Or if you never read it in the first place, you should read it.
I would have been. It now makes me really, really want to read the Jeff Johns Gary Frank one again and just sort of do a little bit of a comparison, even though it's an unfair comparison. Just it doesn't make any sense to compare the two, but just kind of see how I react to it. Because that has to be the most recent origin story that I've read.
Well, other than New 52, there's that. I mean,
there's no formal origin story in the New 52. It's just right. We see his younger. We have flashbacks to things, but there's no, like, this is self-contained.
Right.
So there's nothing like that with the New 52.
And it'd be interesting to read this, read this, and Man of Steel and Secret Origin, all, you know, sort of compare and contrast them all.
Yeah, my memory is I enjoyed Secret Origin, but I didn't like it as much as some of John's and Frank's other stories,
mm-hmm.
like Superman and the Legion of Superheroes and the Brainiac one.
Well, that was and that happened right before, right?
Right. This whole block.
That whole block together, though, as a whole, is just, I think, genius.
Yeah, they did Secret Origin when everyone else was working on New Krypton, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but this is good. I was happy to find that while I still prefer Man of Steel, I did really enjoy this, and I was worried that I wasn't going to because I didn't really love it when it first came out. So I was happy to see. And I think maybe a lot of it is because Superman's been so lost for the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely.
In between the comics and the movie and everything, it hasn't been a good time for Superman, but at least as a character. So I was happy to sort of get back to this old, you know, classic Superman, which is so great.
And that's not to say there isn't good stuff coming out, because you've got The Adventures of Superman, which has been very good so far.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick that book up now. And I'm reading The Unleashed or Extreme or To the Max.
Unchained.
Unchained, yeah. it's off the chain.
It is a little bit.
But, you know, he's a tough character. There's a reason why he's so fascinating, because it is so easy to fail at this. And so when you have a book like this that is so easy to get, and for people who are listening to it who haven't read it, I'd strongly recommend going the Comixology route. It is available on the iBook store, but I'm going to do a piece on this, but there's the way they format it. For the iPad is incredibly frustrating. They actually, Paul, you'll love this. They actually make a fake book and then have a fake spine down the center with fake three-dimensional shadow. So during a full two-page spread, there's a line in the middle of it with a little 3D shadow.
I've seen that.
It absolutely makes no sense at all. So, and also there's a really jarring animated effect. You can't just go page to page. You literally, the camera moves. It's a whole technical nightmare. But I assume that the Comixology experience is a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like the iBooks version.
The iBooks version is garbage. It's an absolute travesty.
This version is just, like your standard digital comic.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
The one I'm looking at, anyway. But I like this. I think Superman fans should check this out. I think you mentioned before that he's easy and I think he's deceptively hard as a character.
Yeah, he's extremely hard.
I think it looks like it'd be easy to write a Superman story, but then that's when you get things that don't really are not true to the character at all. And and that's something to say, you can't update the character and have it be modern, but there's some things about Superman that must remain Superman, no matter what the version is. It could be a silly version, it could be a fascist version, it could be all kinds of versions, but there's a Superman-ness to the character that has to show through.
You know, and there's a reason, you know, there's been so many misses, and it is deceptively difficult, but there's a reason that we keep on trying.
Mm-hmm. Well, you try like Superman, you don't give up.
That's right. So I think that's it for our Booksplode on Superman Birthright by Mark Waid and Lionel Francis Yu.
But why Birthright? Just lastly, before we close it up, I don't understand that title at all. Do you guys know where it came from? I mean, Birthright is a very odd. That's an odd titling for this series. It's my birthright to be this person. Like,
I think because they delved more into the Krypton side of things, that sort of he's taking on the birthright of his family.
It actually feels a little bit more appropriate for the Man of Steel movie, because that was more about nature than nurture.
Yes.
There's you can get into a whole conversation about that. Well, we won't. we'll come back to it in a few years. But anyways.
Yeah, there'll be another one.
So that's it for this one. Check out our regular Pick of the Week podcast over on ifanboy.com. And if you have any questions or comments for us, send those along to contact@ifanboy.com. And we'll see you next time. I'm Paul.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Mike.